Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, dass du gerade hier bist, dass du zuhörst, denn heute wartet ein ganz besonders wertvolles Interview auf dich, was voller unfassbarer Inspiration ist. Und zwar habe ich die wundervolle Rachel Braithen im Interview, die du vielleicht auch kennst als Yoga Girl. Und Rachel lebt auf Aruba mit ihrer kleinen Tochter und ihrem Mann und hat dort tatsächlich vor ein paar Jahren eine weltweite Yoga-Bewegung losgetreten, hat mittlerweile den größten Social-Media-Account für eine Yoga-Community als Yoga-Girl mit über 3 Millionen Followern. Und Rachel ist ein Mensch, der mich seit Jahren wirklich sehr inspiriert. Ich liebe die Art und Weise, wie sie ihr Leben gestaltet, wie sie wirklich voller Freude, aber gleichzeitig auch so echt und so authentisch durch ihr Leben geht. Und Rachel hat mittlerweile sehr, sehr viele tolle Dinge aufgebaut. Sie hat viele eigene soziale Projekte, mit denen sie die Welt verbessert hat. Ein eigenes Yoga-Studio auf Aruba. Und ihre Vision, ihre Mission ist es wirklich, so vielen wie Menschen wie möglich auch dabei zu helfen, in ihre eigene Kraft zu kommen. Und in diesem Interview sprechen wir unter anderem darüber, wie Yoga auch Rachel geholfen hat, selbst zu heilen. Wir sprechen darüber, wie sie Business und Spiritualität miteinander verbindet. Wir sprechen darüber, wie sie mit ihrem inneren Kritiker umgeht und was sie macht, wenn die Selbstzweifel losgehen. Wir reden darüber, wie sich ihr Leben verändert hat, seitdem ihre kleine Tochter geboren ist, was ihre wichtigste spirituelle Praxis ist und über ganz viele andere wundervolle Themen. Und dieser Podcast ist wirklich einfach ein unfassbar schönes, inspirierendes Gespräch und ich bin mir ganz sicher, dass du viel für dich mitnehmen wirst und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude beim Zuhören und dich inspirieren lassen. Und wie immer freue ich mich natürlich sehr, wenn du nach der Folge bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler. Und unter dem Post von heute deine Gedanken zu der Folge hinterlässt. Und ich wollte gerne mal was Neues ausprobieren. Und zwar fände ich es super schön, wenn du die ein oder zwei Sätze unter dem Post schreibst, die für dich irgendwie das größte Aha-Erlebnis ausgelöst haben oder wo du am meisten mitgenommen hast. Wie so das wichtigste Zitat vielleicht für dich von dem, was Rachel gesagt hat. Und ich fände es so schön, wenn wir danach irgendwie so eine riesige Zitate-Sammlung aus dieser Podcast-Folge haben. Deswegen, ich wollte es einfach mal super gerne ausprobieren. Oder du schreibst mir einfach wirklich komplett deine Gedanken dazu, was dieses Zitat bei dir ausgelöst hat oder was dieser Satz bei dir ausgelöst hat. Und darüber würde ich mich einfach voll freuen, wenn wir uns da gegenseitig auch nochmal inspirieren können, weil jeder ja so ein Gespräch auch ganz unterschiedlich hört und aufnimmt. Also schau super gerne bei mir vorbei und schreib mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge, was du für dich mitgenommen hast. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz, ganz viel Freude mit diesem Interview mit Rachel. Viel Spaß! I am so happy, so grateful and so excited to have a woman here in the podcast that inspires me since years and of whom I think that she is really one of the most inspiring people actually living right now because she's so real, so has her own kind of magic. And most of you will know her. It's Rachel Braithen, aka Yoga Girl. And I'm so happy that you're here, Rachel. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. I'm so, so excited to be here. And what a nice introduction.
Yeah. And I guess most of the people know you already, but maybe you can just summarize in a few minutes what you're doing right now. And just get us into your life. Like, who are you? What inspires you? What is in your head right now? So that people just get a little bit in touch with who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a hard question. Like, who are you? my name is Rachel and I live in Aruba. I've been living here for almost a decade, but I am originally Swedish. I was born and raised in Uppsala and in Stockholm. And I decided to leave Europe and to leave Sweden when I was about 18 years old because I needed a new life. So I ended up moving to Costa Rica, where I lived for 2-3 years, and found yoga there. I was already really into meditation and decided to make yoga my life I really became sort of yoga obsessed after I found the practice. And I moved to Aruba. I met my husband, who's from here, and I've been here now 10 years, and we have a 1.5-year-old baby and a yoga studio on the island, and teach yoga all over the world these days.
That's amazing. And well, all of the people who know you know right now that you're like under, how do you say it in English, underestimating or undertelling, I don't know the English word for it, no. That actually what you do is much more. Like, you are, I mean, you have this amazing online platform you built for people who to get in touch with yoga and spiritual practice. You have, as far as I know, you do a lot of like amazing social work for dogs and children, what we are going to talk about. And what I think is so inspiring, when like, because I think I was following you since 4 or 5 years, like really some time, and it's just so amazing to see like how you just build like one thing after another, and then you do this and this, and it's just, it's really, really inspiring to see, yeah, how much use you make of your life. And yeah, I just think that's really beautiful.
Oh, thank yeah. you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sort of a serial entrepreneur by now, yeah. I guess, or like I find an idea or something that I think is missing or needed, or and I just go. I don't yeah. have like a moment where I pause and I think, oh, is this a good idea? I just do it. And then luckily I have a husband who's very patient and also a really good team of people that help me now. So it's not just me alone, but yeah, I like to do good things if I can.
Yeah, yeah. And I would like to go back a little bit in time. You said you went to Costa Rica, and like, you've been how old then when you moved there?
18. I went 18. For the first time. Yeah.
So how was Rachel back then? Like, if I would talk to Rachel with 18, how was she back then? Who was that girl?
Oh wow, she was very, very cocky, but also very insecure at the same time. It was this sort of, I think, almost fake confidence. So. Mm. From a person who's very insecure, and then I kind of had this mask of like, I knew everything and I knew what I was doing, but I was actually completely terrified of everything. I came from a fairly challenging childhood. I had a lot of death and a lot of trauma and separation and divorce and kind of a crazy family. Right now I have seven smaller sisters and brothers, but they are all with different like stepmothers and stepfathers, and you know, they're all half siblings. And I have to say, right now I have seven siblings because my dad is still having kids. So we have sort of crazy modern day wild family, which right now is all fun and I really love it. But when I was little, it was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And I actually ended up leaving Sweden because I needed a break from everything. I needed just to get away and figure out who I was. And that's why I went to Costa Rica in the first place.
So we imagine now you're 18, you're coming to Costa Rica, feeling insecure, but acting very secure. And then yoga happens to you somehow. How did yoga find you, or how did you find yoga?
So actually, right before I traveled, I went on a meditation retreat. Actually, I did two healing retreats in Sweden, because I was having a really, really hard time and was drinking a lot. I was very destructive. I was really unhappy. And I went to these meditation retreats. So I had already found meditation, which was sort of, you know, which is a big part of yoga, but I hadn't found yoga asana yet. And that's what sort of came my way in Costa Rica, was the connection between the spirit, the mind, and the body. I didn't have the physical component of being present in my body. I didn't know how to do that. So I, and Costa Rica is of course this big hub for yoga. You know, there's yoga studios everywhere, and it's a big destination for yoga retreats, and there's this big holistic community there. And everywhere I went, people were saying, oh, you should do yoga. If you meditate, you should practice yoga. And I was really nervous about it, because I thought, to be a yoga person, you have to be super flexible, or you have to be super spiritual. You have to be this special type of person. And I didn't feel like I was that type of person. So I thought I wouldn't fit in. I wouldn't be able to go to a studio and take a class. And then I ended up taking sort of, yeah, the first one that I took there. And I had a very different experience where I actually felt really accepted and I didn't feel like people were staring at me. I felt really good. But I didn't have this, a lot of people ask me all the time if I had this aha moment where like yoga changed my life. I took one class and then everything was different, but it wasn't like that for me. It was over maybe a year of kind of patient practice before it stuck with me, really.
But you just kept going there and practicing, and then it just stuck to you, or was there in the year? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this overnight. Like I meet so many people that they take they have their first yoga experience and it's like, oh my God, like eye opening. Holy cow. Changed my life. This is it. And for me, it was this very slow process because I was really fearful and I had also a lot of physical pain. I had a ton of back pain. So I was really cautious to practice. And then after a while, I just realized, oh, this is something that I need to do it every day. And then, you know, it became part of my life and it became this hugely important part of my lifestyle. But it wasn't overnight that it happened.
And if we go back, or if you go now into today, and if you just reflect on it, like in which way yoga changed your life, what would you say was like, if there is like this one thing, or is it more the entire gift that yoga brings to people, that it just combines everything? What would you say, how did yoga change your life from the perspective of today?
I mean, it's always different. I find that yoga always somehow provides me with what I need when I need it, but it's always different because life is always changing and we're evolving and everything always moves. So I think in the very beginning, I had a lot of pain. I was really with a ton of physical pain. I couldn't bend over to tie my shoes. I would throw my back out. I had no core strength. I was constantly finding myself in pain, lower back pain all the time. So the first thing that yoga really brought me was healing from that, and also inner strength so that I was able to support my body more. And just being free from pain and being free from the fear of constant pain was huge. I mean, really life-changing for me. And then after that, I became really comfortable and I started feeling like, okay, my body is a safe space. I don't have to worry all the time that I'm going to, you know, do something wrong and throw my back out. So I have to lie in bed for 1 week. And then I started finding really strength and I found vinyasa yoga and I found, I was practicing Ashtanga for a little bit, but mostly vinyasa flow. And I started just getting so into the physical aspect of it, really the movement, the advanced asana, the inversions, the handstands. Like I became really empowered in the body, which was another thing that I needed then. And then it moved from there to I kind of overdid it with the physical. And I started traveling like 45 crazy weeks out of the year. And I didn't need it anymore, this dynamic go, go, go. And then yoga became like a refuge, a place for me to just be still and to not move. And I got really into yin and to restorative yoga. And it's just, yeah, it's always moving for me. And right now, I mean, I have a toddler who's totally crazy. She's the best thing that's ever happened to me by far. I mean, she's amazing, but she's a year and a half and she's never still. I mean, never, ever, you know, so I have this sort of high alert presence as a mother all the time. So now yoga is this place of, it's the one time of the day that's just for me. I mean, really, it's this place of just grounding and remembering that also, that I am also a priority in my life and not just, you know, my family or my daughter or my work. But yeah, it's the one place that's just for me right now.
Is that something you had to learn, that you yourself are also a priority in your life?
Yes. It's so strange that it's such an obvious thing. Like we should all just, you know, realize that. But no, and I realized how I had this luxury of, before becoming a mom, of time. I mean, I didn't realize it before I had a baby, but But really, and I would always say, oh, but I'm so busy and I work so much and I teach and travel. And I always felt like I was really busy. But actually, I had this immense total luxury of all the time in the world. And I could choose really what to do with that time. So if I wanted to at 4 p.m. do 3 hours of yoga practice, I could do that. I could choose whenever in my day it fit with everything else. But now as a mother, it's different because she's the number one priority. I mean, all the time, and she will always be. So it's completely different depending on her mood and how she's feeling and how she's sleeping and eating and, you know, the day she decides the day. And I find that if I don't make myself a priority early in the day, it gets lost. So I have this good intention like, oh, okay, I'll practice later. Maybe after dinner, maybe when she's sleeping. And then she's asleep at 7:30 and I'm so tired, I need to like lie on the couch. You know, like, oh my God, someone like pour me a glass of wine.
So what you do is actually you take the time in the early morning for yourself?
Yes. And it's this, I have to do it. Like if I don't do it, I don't know how to make it through the day.
Yeah. Take me into your morning routine, to your morning practice. So you wake up. What is the first thing you do?
I wake up. The first thing I do is I take my dogs. I have three dogs. So I let the dogs outside. And then I make tea. I usually make tea or hot lemon water. These days, usually mostly tea. And then I take my yoga mat and I go to my patio outside. And I roll out my mat and I sit. Usually the first 30 minutes. I just sit. I don't move. I sit, I breathe, I meditate, and I watch the sunrise. And then depending on the time, so how much time I have, and also how, when the baby wakes up, I practice and I move, which sometimes becomes an hour and a half if I really wake up early enough. Sometimes it's 30 minutes or 45, which is also okay. And then the baby wakes up, and then we have breakfast, and we make coffee, and we have these sort of long mornings actually where sometimes I take a class when she naps. We have 9:30 classes at the studio, which are perfect for her naps. So then if I only have 30 minutes in the morning, then I go to the studio and I take a second class at 9:30. But we have these long mornings with long breakfasts and all around the table, like no stress really in the morning. I usually don't start properly working until after she's napping.
That's nice. That sounds like a good morning. And yeah, do you have a certain meditation you do in the morning, or is it every morning a different sort of meditation? Is it just breathing, or is it visual? I cannot pronounce
visualization. It's always a little bit different, and I find it tends to differ depending on how my night was. So if I went to bed in a good time and I had a good night's sleep, I find I usually don't need to use like a technique or a mantra or anything like that. It's pretty easy for me to sit and just watch my breath and that's it. But then some days, like two nights ago, like I don't know why, but crazy things in the middle of the night, our air conditioning broke. And it's very hot here. Oh my God! It's in 5 minutes. It's like it's impossible to sleep. And then we lost electricity in the whole house. And then the baby woke up. And then all these things happened in the night. And in the end, I was like, okay, you know, I wake up and I woke up at 6 or something, but I felt like I didn't sleep at all. So in a morning like that, when I wake up and I feel tense or like, oh, almost like it's struggle. The day is already a struggle and it's 6 in the morning. then I need more. Usually it's really hard for me then to sit and be still. So then maybe I move before I sit, or I really do some pranayama before, or I need more tools because my mind tends to be a little bit more challenging, I guess.
do you have a certain mantra that guides you, or a mantra that you always go back to, like a personal guiding mantra or something that gives you strength when you need it?
Yeah, I have a few that I work with, but actually for me, so some Sanskrit ones that I always come back to, like Om Mani Padme Hum, I use a lot. But I make mantras out of really simple words in my own language. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, that struggling morning, I'm like having a bad day, but it's only morning time, which is crazy. So then I need to bring myself back to a place of gratitude of like, oh, what a blessing, you know, that I can be here and the sun is rising and I live in this beautiful place with my beautiful family. Like everything is great. There's nothing is wrong. But then I might make a mantra out of thank you, you know, so thank you. And that's the mantra that I repeat with every breath. And I find that it's easier. It means more for the really the depth of my heart than any Sanskrit mantra does.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think that's so important because I sometimes have the feeling that people, especially who just starting with meditation or with their spiritual practice, that sometimes they think that they have to do it in a certain way to make it right. And I just think it's really beautiful that what you say, that it's just do what feels good in that moment, like what helps you the most, and that is the right thing. And not to just say some mantra to say some mantra.
For some people, I think that the discipline of having it be the same thing, like maybe something your teacher taught you or, you know, every day do the same thing, or you choose between a book of different mantras or different. For some people, that's really comforting, you know, to not have to think or make the decision or, you know. So I think it depends. It's different for different people, for sure.
Yeah. What would you say is your most important spiritual practice you have, if you can say it like that?
I mean, motherhood is the most spiritual practice I've ever had. I mean, by far, being really present with my daughter as she grows up, it's. Nothing has changed my life more, and it's definitely a spiritual practice being a parent. I mean, not just for mothers, but being a parent, and you know, in the really hard moments, still being present and acknowledging that it's hard and seeing the love anyway. I mean, it's definitely a spiritual practice, I find. Maybe you were looking for an answer like, oh, like the yoga.
No, not at all. Never. This is what I love about interviewing people. I'm never looking for a certain answer. I just love every answer that comes up. So there is no right or wrong. And I absolutely agree that I think that it's that there is nothing more spiritual probably than putting yourself into the service of someone else, like your daughter or your son, or just being there to guide someone also through life. I mean, this is maybe the most spiritual thing you can do.
But also, I mean, and I've realized so much that sometimes I don't know who is doing the guiding. It's her guiding me or me guiding her. It's really this kind of symbiotic dance that we do together. That's really, and I mean, for me, it really started already with her birth. I had this massive, massive spiritual lesson during labor and during birth that I realized later I needed to learn it to be a mother. There is something about learning to surrender and to let go and to not remain in constant control. It's very, very hard for me. I'm a very I like to control things, and I like to know, you know, where we're going and what are we doing there and can I be in charge all the time. But with motherhood, you know, it doesn't work like at all. Like it doesn't. It never works out the way I plan it, or you know, because it's this total step into the unknown. So already from birth I got to practice that, which is a beautiful thing. So she guides me a lot.
when you were in labor, you had that realization that you have to surrender and let go of control, or was it?
Yes.
Okay.
And it came as a strange sort of because I really wanted a home birth. I really had it. Like I read 13 books on natural birth. I have a library of books, and I like to always do research. and all these things. But I read so many books and I decided I really want this totally natural birth and at home and in a birth pool and all these things. And I became so convinced that this was my way, like my only way, that I started becoming actually terrified of the hospital. For most people, it's the other way around. Like the idea of not being in a hospital is really scary and they want to feel like there's doctors and people that, you know, are educated and this and that. And I started getting really, really fearful of the hospital, didn't want any drugs, anything. And I was more than 2 weeks overdue, which is really pretty far overdue. And in the States and also here where I live in Aruba, they normally never let you go further than 1 week. So I was really fighting with the gynecologist and with the midwife, and they were trying to induce me and to kind of, you know, speed up the, yeah, start the labor basically, which I was like completely refusing. And I even had this crazy gynecologist woman look me in the eye, ask me, do you want your baby to live? And I was like, what? You know, because I felt so convinced and I was really trusting in my body, and this is going to happen at her time, not at the time when some doctor says something. So because of all of that, I was so decided it's going to be at home in this pool and screw everybody else. No one else is going to be here. I don't want any doctor or, you know, anybody else. And then I labored at home and it went really well for about 18 hours or something. And then the progress just stopped. Like we were stuck in the same place basically for 18 hours with no, yeah, in the same place, not in the same place, but the same dilation and all these things. And I had this moment where I just realized like, I can't do it. And I never in my life had a realization like that because there's nothing I can't do. Yeah. Even since I was little, I was very convinced like I can do everything. And then I had this realization like, I can't. I just can't birth this baby. It's not going to happen. Like someone else needs to do it. Like someone else has to take over. And I realized that this control that I had, this need to control, that it had to be alone in this pool with no one present. This control, this holding on to what had to be, was actually the reason that I wasn't able to let go. I wasn't able to kind of let birth happen. And in the end, I asked for help and I told my husband, I want to go to the hospital. And he thought I was crazy. He thought I had lost my mind. And I said, we have to go to the hospital. I can't do it. And in the car, I fell asleep because I relaxed so much with the idea of asking for help. Like it was such a strange experience. But in the middle of this very, very painful labor, I relaxed so much because I knew, oh, okay, I let go. Someone else is going to help me. And I slept. And then she was born, like, immediately, with still no medication, nothing, no intervention. But it was just this, I had to ask for help. Huh? And that for me was just this, I never ask for help. I like to do everything myself and alone. And when it comes to motherhood, this letting go of the control and also asking for help when you need it, those two things have been the most valuable lessons for me by far.
That's amazing. It's really beautiful. And I think it's very brave also in a moment like that to really surrender then and to say, okay, we go to the hospital now, even though maybe your ego or whatever was like, no, you said you do it your way, and to be strong in that moment. Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. And it's amazing how these little souls already teach us the biggest lessons for life.
Already. I'm sure you experienced that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give birth at home. I was thinking about it, but we are also not going to a hospital. We are going to it's called Geburtshaus, a birth house where you are in a safe place, but you have people around you who can help you.
Oh, yeah, like a birthing center.
Yeah, that is the word for it. I usually just translate the German word.
That's great. I think that's such a great middle place.
Middle way. Yeah, I think so too.
Perfect. Yeah, we don't have any here. Yeah.
You don't have any in Aruba?
No, but also like... there's only one hospital and it's 5 minutes away from everywhere. So
okay, that's good to know. At least that you know that you can go there if you have to. And I would really like to talk about also, I mean, you are like really building an amazing company, or an amazing, it's not really a company, it's so much more, I think. I mean, it's really, you are building your own world, sort of how you see your world and where people can somehow participate. And I would really like to talk about how you combine your spirituality and business, like, because I feel, or that's the impression I have, that you are a spiritual, like you're walking the talk, sort of. You're not only talking it, you're living it. You really, really, you talk about how you feel, and you have your spiritual practice, and you are a really, really successful woman. So what would you say, how is your own way of spirituality helping you in building your business, and maybe, yeah, supporting you even in building your business?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's hard for me to answer, because for me, everything is so intertwined. And also through the online world and then social media and my studio and the community and everything here, I never feel like I go to work. You know, it's very hard for me to separate the business and work from my personal life and also family, because we do everything together as one. You know, even my teacher trainings here, like the baby is there all day. And so actually it's hard to say how my spirituality has helped just in business. But what I've come to find again and again is I have to bring myself back to the reason why. Especially when there's a challenge, and it goes for relationships and family and also work and everything. But whenever there is a challenge of any kind, and I don't know what to do, or I don't know what the answer is or where to go, what I try to do is come back to that, really the spiritual reason of why am I doing this? You know, what is the purpose of this life, or of this business, or of this type of work? Why did I start it in the first place? And what do I want the end result really to be? Which for me has always been two things together as one. So the first thing is I want to support people on their path of inner healing, whether that's through yoga, meditation, personal development, work on trauma. Like, I want to provide tools to support that inner healing that's so needed for everybody. I mean, no one is on the outside of that. And so that we can fill our own cups and we can find the healing that we need to heal, so that we can be of service to the outside world. So it's really those two components of the inner healing and the outer service coming together as one. That's what I want to do. I want to be in support of that for as many people around the world as possible. Because I know that, I mean, I've experienced it myself, that inner connection of the moment when we feel whole and we know that we are cared for and we find some sort of balance or peace or healing from past pain and wounds and things like that, that there is this automatic click of, oh, but now I can do good for other people. Yeah. And we have to have that component to have a happy, I don't think we can have a truly happy life if we're not of service to others. But it's also really hard to be of service if we're lacking. So for me, yoga and specifically my business, it's based on all of that. So if I have a decision I don't know what to make, or a choice, I have to ask, does it support that? Does this decision here, or this thing, or this whatever is in front of me right now, does it support this inner healing? And is it allowing people and myself to be of service? If the answer is yes, then I do it. If the answer is no, then I say no. Which sometimes has meant saying no to really difficult things, like maybe opportunities with a really big financial gain, or ads, or collaborations with companies, or I don't know, things that I guess many people would probably just say yes because it looks good on the outside, but for me didn't resonate with my why on this deep spiritual level. And then I always say no, and usually, I mean, always, actually, in the end of it, I always get this affirmation of, oh, I'm so glad we didn't do that thing, or I'm glad we went this direction instead.
That's beautiful. That absolutely resonates with me so much. They're on a very similar path, I think, on the vision. I think it's very, very similar. So I feel that a lot, that if you also, if like, I think your why is bigger than yourself, that then it's way easier also to make difficult decisions, because it's not only about you, but you also make the decision for so much more that you already see that will happen afterwards.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And that's an important view to keep, so we don't become really full of ourselves. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
That's the day where we get really, it's easy to get really stuck with this idea of me and mine. Yeah. And if we have this very limited outlook, we're never going to, we have to see the big picture, and how does my actions affect the greater good of the whole world, or the whole community, or the whole company, or the whole family, or whatever it is we're talking about.
You said in the beginning of our conversation, you said that you, when you want to do something and you think it's right, you just do it. You don't doubt. You just go. You do it. I think that's more or less how you said it.
Yeah.
But is like, you don't doubt yourself? Like, is there never where you think, is this really? Because, for example, like, even until now, I don't know, I think it's the 200th podcast episode or something. And there is a part of me that knows it's good, but also, like, when I do my solo episodes, for example, but also I think, is that good enough? And, like, I never, like, there's never this 100%, like, this is perfect, sort of. Like, there's always this little voice of doubt. I mean, I guess you know that voice.
Probably. The inner critic. Yeah, I know that.
How do you deal with that voice? I mean, like, how's your relationship with your inner critic or that voice that I think everyone has that somehow keeps us small or tries to keep us small?
Yes, I mean, definitely. I think depending on how we grew up, or, you know, the sort of childhood or past that we've had, the inner critic is always going to be, you know, show up in different areas of life for different types of people. And for me, my inner critic is almost never around when it comes to business, like, at all. I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day when it comes to, to projects or creating or manifesting something, or I don't know, starting a new company, or I don't know, whatever it is. I don't have that inner voice that tells me, oh, that you can't do it. Or the voice that says, oh, but that podcast wasn't good enough. Like, I don't have it. And I don't know why. I think maybe I was raised in that way with a lot of, I don't know, with a lot of confidence in that sphere. Like, I always did really well in school. I always felt really confident about accomplishing things. But for me, my inner critic is super loud when it comes to personal relationships. I mean, really, like, if I'm making a new friend, or I don't know, maybe like with girlfriends, even with girlfriends that I've known my whole life, and we're all at dinner, and then I tell a story, and sometimes my inner critic goes, why did you tell that long, boring story? Like, oh, you know, everyone's going to think you are so full of yourself. Or my inner critic gets really loud in motherhood, like, am I a good mother? Am I doing this right? What if I'm fucking everything up? And, you know, so in those instances, I have to constantly sort of bring myself back to the present moment so that voice doesn't become too loud, and also do like a little reality check, because the inner critic in those personal moments can really take me to places where I feel totally worthless, and like, nobody likes me, and I'm all alone, and I have no friends, and I'm a bad mom, which I know objectively isn't true. But if I'm having a bad day, that voice can get really loud. But somehow, like, when it comes to, business, it's not at all present, which I think is why I have this ability to just go.
So if I understand it right, your strategy to calm down the inner critic is to bring yourself in, like, to be aware, okay, there is this voice of my inner critic that says, why are you telling the story or whatever? And, like, the first thing you do is you get aware of, there is this voice. And then you get into the present moment and you calm yourself down, and then you choose another thought, or, like, how do you shift it?
Yeah, I mean, and it's different depending on the... so I think the inner critic, it's always going to touch on our biggest insecurities, right? Or these, things that we affirm to ourselves as truth, maybe just because of conditioning or because of, yeah, our past pain or trauma or fear of pain. So we all have these wounds, I guess, that we somehow or sometimes repeat in life. And for me, I have this big wound of abandonment since I was little. So my inner critic or that voice is always coming back to like fear of abandonment or fear of not being liked or not being good enough. So if my inner critic is touching on one of those really deep things, sometimes it's really incredibly hard to turn that voice off. And then I find that just this idea of, oh, well, finding body awareness or, you know, mindfulness or present moment practice, and then choose another thought, it can be totally impossible. I mean, and I see this a lot with the people that I work with and students and in trainings. And if we have this affirmed belief that we are not good, that we are not worthy of love, that we are not worthy of success, it can almost be like a laughable thing to tell someone, oh, but just, you know, choose another thought, just be positive, because it can be so, you know, an impossible thing to do. And I find in those really like difficult moments, the only way, at least for me, is I have to get out of my head and into my body. And the way to do that is I have to move, but like a lot, like I have to, really sweaty yoga practice or a run or dance, or like I'll put on a song in the kitchen, like a crazy song, and spend 5 minutes, you know, jumping up and down, dancing, shaking. Like I need to get the energy back into my body and away from this conditioned thought in my head. And it's like a miracle pill. Like it totally, totally works. Number one, it's a little strange to at the drop of a hat, like, excuse me, I have to go dance now. But I will do that if I have a bad day. Like yesterday, I'm in the middle of this sort of social media debate or controversy, or I don't know how to label it, but just these past couple of days, and also still a little bit yesterday, where I want to educate my community on the topic of cultural appropriation and how can we respect really the Indian roots of the culture of yoga and do this in a really respectful way. And of course, because it's social media, the conversation and the comment section has sort of derailed into crazy places. And I had a moment yesterday where I was just scrolling through comments, feeling very, you know, very attacked, and I couldn't switch my brain from where I was. And I had to ask my husband, I said, you know, can you set up the bike for me? And I spent 1 hour on his like really strange exercise bike. I hate it. I mean, I hate biking. It's not for me. But I needed to move. And I did that for 1 hour and then I was good again. So I think reaching for movement as a form of medicine, you know, instead of, I don't know, like a Valium or what people take, like a Zoloft or a Netflix or a bottle of wine or, yeah, movement
it's changing the energy you're in. Like,
yes, like, completely. Yeah. Because if we're in the body, like life is always good. Yeah. You know, if we're here, it's those scary places the mind takes us sometimes that take us to those dark places. So using the body as a tool and learning how to use, you know, learning how to do that in a way every day. That's why I love yoga so much, because it brings us that body awareness so that I can catch like, oh, wait, I'm so tense right now. And if I wasn't in the practice of yoga, I wouldn't be able, I think, to listen enough to realize, oh, wait, I'm actually sitting with this really destructive thought pattern right now that's taking me scary, crazy places. And that's why I feel like crap. You know, some people don't, if we don't have that physical awareness of the body, we don't even notice what's going on. And maybe we just unconsciously reach for these, for ways to self-medicate, you know, in more negative ways.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it's really important. And I think this is something that we kind of, or not only kind of, I think it's something we don't learn to detach from the thoughts by going to the body and just being present in yourself and seeing, feeling, okay, I am not that thought. It is there, but it also goes away if I'm just present with the moment, because the thought cannot stay all the time. It will go.
Right.
Sometime it will be gone, and it goes faster when you change your energy, your state you're in. I have one question that I think is something that I really find that inspires me a lot on how you deal with it, but it's the topic on social media. I mean, you have a huge, huge, huge community on social media, but you also, I mean, the bigger the community gets, of course, there are more people who have different opinions and who sometimes are really not kind, I think. And what take me to your head, like how do you deal with that? Like I think I would have deleted my account 200 times or something because I think it's so mean sometimes. Like, I mean, how do you deal with that? How do you do that?
I mean, it's a really hard thing. Like, it's interesting because I'm in the middle of this sort of social media stormy place right now, and it's very rare for me to be in a place where I'm just okay. I need to do something now. I need to shut this comment section off because people are going crazy in there about something. And I think because I try very hard to always be really authentic and to be really real in whatever I share. So if I have a bad day, like this morning, I dropped my daughter off at daycare for the first time and I sat in my car crying for 30 minutes. Horrible. I could cry right now, actually.
Did you pick up her already, or is she still there?
Yes, I already picked her up. Everything was fine.
Yeah? Like, was she happy?
She was happy. She didn't even cry when I left. Like, everything was great. But I am still sitting in my car, like, bawling my eyes out, and I don't know why. It's just like she's out in the world now, you know? It's just, it's crazy. But then I share that. Like, I try to, okay, I'm in this emotion and it's really hard to be a mom. And, you know, even the happy moments are sometimes hard because there's so much emotion all the time. And I try to share all the nuanced aspects of my life. So it's not just this fairy tale. And I live on a Caribbean island and we're on the beach all the time. And I have a dream job and I, you know, have this great life, but I don't just share the dreamy parts because it's a normal life. It's not all dreamy. And I think because of that, I get less of the, sort of that unconscious social media hate, you know, people that sometimes they're just on the internet, looking for drama or looking for someone to kind of spew their negativity on. I don't get a lot of that in the day to day, and I'm really grateful for that. But when it happens, it's so hard. It's so hard. And I think it is because I mean, I have these sort of this wound of like fear of not being liked or accepted. Which is like, if you have millions of people in your community, it's an impossible thing. Like, not everybody is gonna like me. Not everybody's gonna agree with me. You know that quote. Ugh, I love this quote. It's the like, you can be the juiciest, most delicious peach in the whole world, and there's still gonna be people that don't like peaches.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to remind myself, like, it's not my job to bend over backwards to please an entire community of millions of people. It's not my job. My job is to be myself and to do my best to be genuine, to be inspiring, to be authentic with everything, with good and bad, high and low, you know, to just be me. That's my job, to be me. And there's going to be people that don't resonate with that, that don't like that, that think I'm, you know, that I'm doing bad things or raising my daughter wrong or blah, blah, blah. And if I let every single person that doesn't approve of what I do, if I let that in, I wouldn't be able to do this work. I mean, I would have closed this Instagram account years ago.
Yeah.
I would have not been in this business. I would have not, you know, been doing the podcast every week. Like, no, it's not possible to hold space for people who don't enjoy what you do and who are really negative and, you know, not resonating and still continue. No. So what I try to do is, you know, like right now in my comment feed, there's a really important conversation happening on a super important topic that I brought up purposely because I want to educate the Western community that I have that I have online. But it's now, you know, through this craziness of the internet, it's become this almost racist dialogue between different types of people. And many people aren't even part of my original community. They're just there because it's a huge drama now. And then it's my job to, okay, how can I moderate this conversation? How can I provide more tools of learning? How can I share really good reading on this topic? Can I invite educated people into the podcast to talk about it? Like, how can I educate and people that need to be educated without, you know, taking all of this on personally and go to bed at the end of the day feeling like I am a terrible person and I have done everything wrong? Because I know, you know, that's not the case, but sometimes it's easy to get confused if you have 1,000 people telling you that you are terrible.
Of course. What I think is that usually you need like the time of a revolution so that afterwards something better can come up. And a revolution always is like tumbling, you know, there is a lot of tension, a lot of emotions, and it's good that it comes up. And I think so. I really acknowledge you that you are like sitting in the middle of it, like in the eye of the tornado, and having the tornado around you and just being like, yeah, but the tornado has to happen, because only if the tornado happens, nature afterwards can build itself up again in a more healthy way.
Oh, for sure. No, and I know like it's all purposeful, and it's also part of what helps me grow and what helps me listen. And, you know, it's, and I think that's why this conversation on privilege is a really important one, because if you are really privileged and you live in this very privileged world, it's also completely possible to be 100% ignorant and have no clue of what's happening in the rest of the world. And there's also this part of the yoga community sometimes that's, oh, but everything is beautiful and love and light and just be present and you don't have to feel the pain. What is that quote? It's my least favorite quote of all time. Like pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. I think it's such bullshit, you know, and you cannot tell that. You can say that if you're privileged and you have a roof over your head and you have this great life, like if you're able to practice yoga, you are a privileged person. It is a privileged thing to be able to have a spiritual practice and to have a personal development practice. It's, we cannot worry about those things if we don't have food on the table, for instance. So I it's my job to continue educating myself and to acknowledge that I have this privilege and help people and support people that don't. And it involves these difficult conversations. But it's also this constant learning of, you know, if 100,000 people tell me I'm great, does it mean I'm great? No. You know, the same way if 100,000 people tell me I'm terrible, does it mean I'm terrible? No. You know, you cannot have this validation lie in the eyes of other people. That doesn't make it truth, whether if it's good or bad.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Yeah, I absolutely feel you. And but I also feel you on the other hand, because you're a human being. And of course, it touches you when someone says something really negative. I mean, it would be strange if it wouldn't. But I also think that it's important to also there to see the bigger picture and the why you're giving that frame for people to get educated. And sometimes it's always interesting. I think if you talk about something that really triggers people, it just will bring up drama. But it's good that it comes up, because then it can be transformed. So
right. It's all necessary. Yes, for sure.
Let's imagine do you know how old you want to become in your life? Like, is there like 120, 130 years old? Like, how old do you want to become in your life?
Oh, I don't think I've ever thought of that before. I don't know. No, I never thought about that. I mean, a long and happy life sounds good.
Awesome. Let's think you have this amazing, beautiful, long, healthy, beautiful, inspiring life. And there has been a technical difficulty and your Instagram account got erased, deleted. Your book doesn't exist anymore. Like, everything you built is gone, like really just gone. And I would come to you. We are all grandmas by then, and I would come to you and I would say, Rachel, so sorry, like really just everything got erased, but I have a white piece of paper here, and could you please write down your three most important wisdom, if nothing else of you would be left from all the things you worked on, what would be the three things you would write on that paper, what you would like people to know?
Oh wow, what an awe-inspiring. I mean, I always come back to the idea of that at the end of the day, you know, the only thing that matters is how much you love, or how how much we are able to give and receive love. I mean, it really comes back to that. And I think at the end of the day, I always keep that in the back of my mind. So, you know, did I love today? Did I show up in a loving way, or was I caught up in, you know, whatever other things it is that society or my mind tells me I had to do? Did I love today? And if the answer to that is yes, then I think I did a good job. So the only thing that matters is how much you love. That's one of my favorite sort of musings to come back to.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know. The letting go, the wisdom of letting go. I did a podcast with a Swedish guy who told me he had met a monk. And he had inscribed on the inside of his wedding ring, "This too shall pass." Do you believe it? I was like, in his wedding ring, he inscribed, "This too shall pass." So knowing that everything is fleeting, everything really is fleeting. For me, it's coming back to that. It's one of the tools that helps me to release the need to control, to go more with the flow of life. Because even the good things, they're also fleeting. The bad things are also fleeting. So that super serious attachment to either of them is what causes us a lot of pain in the end, I think. So everything is fleeting. Or "This too shall pass." I don't know if I would be brave enough to put that in.
But I think there's also a beautiful story about, I think it's a story about a king who has always been like very in a bad mood and everything. And then he asked his like the wisest man on his king thing, like that he should help him, and he also gave him like a ring where it says this too shall pass, and that it really brings you to the moment. It really brings you to that it will be over, whatever it is right now. So make the best out of it, what it is right now. And I think especially in marriage, or when people get engaged, or when they decide to be married, that very often there is this illusion that once I'm married, I'll be happy. Like, you know, this picture. And I think this is just not true. It's work. It's every day a new decision to be in that relationship and to work on it. And not only because you are wearing a wedding ring doesn't mean that it's always good, but it's whatever it is, it is right in that moment.
Exactly. Yes. And it's easy to forget also.
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
And it helps you to appreciate more. Know. Sorry. Yeah. The third point on the paper.
Being of service for me is the, like, if there's anything I can really leave instill in my daughter, to be of service, and also all the time, and to recognize that it doesn't have to be these grand, big, impossible gestures, you know. So like we have a lot of organizations and foundations and things like that take up so much work and time and money and all of this, and being of service doesn't have to be these impossible feats of trying to save the world, but we can be of service in our day-to-day life all the time. Like, I think about that. If I'm in a public bathroom and it's really dirty, I clean it. I just always do, instead of just like going to another one, or little things. Like, if you drop trash in the street, pick it up. Like, can you help someone with their groceries? Can you, you know, if there's someone in your own community that you know is struggling now, that needs a break, they need a babysitter, they need a, you know, there's ways to be of service all the time and every day. And I think when we start living life that way, it brings a different quality of life back to us. Yeah. Because we're living with this compassionate outlook and this outlook that we're all connected, which I think brings us so much. So it's, it comes back around. It's not just this, this thing to do something for other people. It's something to infuse in your daily life to make all of life richer. So, be of service, I would say.
Thank you for sharing. So yeah,
thank you.
Amazing. Has there been a book that really inspired you on your path? Is there a book you would recommend the people listening to read? Your book, of course. I put that in the show notes. is there another book that you read and that was like, yeah, where you just think you should really read that book?
I mean, so many, and it's always hard for me to pick one. One that I'm really into now is When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron. Do you know it?
No, I haven't heard about it.
She's German, right? Really? I think, or wait, Austrian. Okay, wait, maybe I'm making that up. but isn't that a German name, Chodron? I don't know. So she has a book. It's When Things Fall Apart. And it's advice for difficult times. And it's just, yeah, it's a book to pick up when things are hard, whatever it is that's hard.
What's your biggest advice? Because I know you have been through many difficult times. So what would you say from your perspective right now is your most important thing, what to do when things fall apart?
To feel it. I mean, it's really the only way. I mean, when pain or struggle comes our way, the only way out is through. And I think our natural sort of tendency is always to avoid and to escape and to go around the pain or around the mountain because it's too hard to climb it. So we look for, you know, other things, or we shut down, or box it away and try to ignore it, or, you know, we want to go back to happy really fast. But I think pain is meant to be felt. That's why it's part of our human existence. It's part of our experience. It's really, I mean, if we think back to every, you know, moment of growth, of learning, of realization, everything that brings us immense wisdom, it always comes from pain, from difficult times. I don't know anyone who said, oh, I spent 10 years on a tropical island, had the time of my life, and it brought me so much wisdom. Like, no.
I haven't heard that either, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's not like, yeah. Everything's been so great lately. I have learned so much. No.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, we learn from the really hard times. So, and I think if we don't experience the pain or feel it, it comes back around in other ways. So we either accumulate in the body, and the body, you know, we start manifesting disease or pain or stiffness or tightness, or it comes back around later. Like I think that depression, of course, it can be also physiological reasons and genetic and things like that. But for many people, I think it's the accumulation of pain unfelt. So if we go through a whole lifetime and we never cry, we never allow ourselves to feel sad, we never express anger, frustration, that emotion has to go somewhere. And at the end of a life, you know, it can manifest as this immense sadness that doesn't go away because we're just full with it. So expressing emotion is a really healthy thing. So if you're sad, cry, like really. And just, you know, we don't even have to have a reason. Like I was crying for 30 minutes in my car this morning. And I'm like, I don't know, is it because of the baby and separation and she's growing up, or is it other things? Like, it doesn't matter. You know, it's, if I need to cry, I cry. And then everything is lighter after that. So the only way out is really through.
Thank you for sharing. And as you are serving so many of us, how can we serve you? Like, what can my community, what can I do to serve you? How can we support you in the best way?
Oh, what a beautiful question. Wow. I mean, so we have a big launch of something very exciting, or actually a couple of exciting things. One of them is a mental health initiative. And the other one is very yoga focused and focused on my own teaching and my own company. So you can sort of follow along in social media and stay tuned for that if you want, or subscribe to my newsletter on rachelbraithen.com because we announce everything through there. But also we have three nonprofits, a new initiative for children here in Aruba that I'm really excited about, that you can also follow along. And I have all the links on that in my social media as well. So Yoga Girl, you can follow anywhere, anyhow.
Amazing. Yeah. So everyone listening, check that out, and everything will be in the show notes, of course.
Yes. Well. Oh, and also I forgot about this.
Your podcast.
But today, actually, right before I got on this podcast with you, we launched our YouTube channel actually as a family, which I'm really excited about because it's not very yoga focused, but it's more family focused and baby and life and day to day. And I'll be sharing also some yoga and wellness inspired advice and things like that on there. So I'm excited about that.
So cool. So like it's a YouTube channel on like on your family life, sort of?
Yes. It's amazing. Yeah, it's called Yoga Girl. So it's also yoga and like I'll be sharing more advice and like a little peek behind the scenes of our lives, I guess. Amazing. And it's been really fun. It's what I do already through social media and Instagram and things like that, but just a little bit more in depth. And it gives me a reason to sit and watch videos of my baby again all day. So
win-win for everyone. Win-win. Yeah, and also like everyone, because I know the people listening to my podcast, they are podcast listeners. So you also have an amazing podcast, which you can also listen to in Germany and Europe and everywhere, of course. So it's Yoga Girl podcast, or is it?
Yes, it's called From the Heart, but you can search Yoga Girl or From the Heart anywhere you get your podcast normally. Yeah. Isn't it nice, the podcast as a medium? It's such a touching way. Yeah. You do a really great job at it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's just, I'm so inspired by it. I put my entire heart into it because I think it's just such a nice way to be in a conversation and just talk and just be, and I just love it.
It's an easy way to be present. I find it's nearly impossible to listen to a podcast and do something else at the same time. It's another way to be here now.
And I really what can I say? I'm just so grateful, and I appreciate you so much, and I acknowledge you so much for being who you are. And I think one sentence that really resonated so much with me is, my job is to be me, what you said. And I just hope that everyone who was listening can just take that like as a core message to their day, that our job is just to be ourselves as authentic as we can, and to stop focusing all the time on what we think who we have to be and just be ourselves, because I think that's what the world needs the most. So thank you for that sentence, because that really was like,
I think I need to remind myself of that too. So thank you for asking the question.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for being you. Thank you for being such a light. Thank you for being so authentic, so real, for sharing so honestly how you feel, what you do. And I think it's just really a huge inspiration for all of us. And I just can't say thank you, and also for that interview. And I hope that whenever I can support you in some way, please let me know. And thank you so much.
You should come visit us in Aruba one day. We would love to have you. It's actually a short 15-hour flight from you.
Yeah, I actually just talked about it with my boyfriend the other day, because he's a windsurfer, and we were just talking because we are going to travel next year for 4 to 5 months, like through the world. And we were like, maybe we should go to Aruba.
So the winter here is amazing. My husband windsurfs too. Oh, do it. Visit us.
We will come by. Thank you so much. Really, Rachel, from the heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir das Interview gefallen hat, dass du ja gerade auch ganz erfüllt bist von Liebe und Freude und dieser wundervollen Energie, die Rachel mitgebracht hat, und dass du die Dinge, die du für dich vielleicht aufgeschrieben hast, die du notiert hast, wirklich auch umsetzt und ja einfach losgehst, dein Leben so zu erschaffen, wie du es dir gerne wünschst. Und wie gesagt, ich würde mich sehr freuen, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und unter dem Post von heute teilst, was du für dich mitgenommen hast, was vielleicht für dich die wichtigste Erkenntnis, Erfahrung oder so dieses eine Zitat, dieser eine Satz gewesen ist, den du gerne für dich mitnehmen möchtest. Darüber würde ich mich sehr freuen. Du findest, wie gesagt, alle Links aus dieser Folge in den Shownotes, den Link zu Rachels Buch, zu Rachels Podcast, zu ihrer Webseite. Also schau gerne hier auch in die Shownotes, falls du es gerade auf iTunes hörst. Und ich freue mich natürlich auch sehr, wenn du mir hier bei iTunes eine 5-Sterne-Bewertung hinterlässt. Darüber würde ich mich riesig freuen. Und einfach generell vielleicht ein bisschen schreibst, was der Podcast in deinem Leben bewegt hat. Das finde ich immer wunderschön, das dann zu lesen. Und ansonsten, eine kleine Info. Der Spiritual Sunday macht ab jetzt eine Babypause. Ich werde jetzt im September kein Spiritual Sunday machen, im Oktober wahrscheinlich auch nicht, nur dass du da Bescheid weißt. Aber die guten Neuigkeiten sind, dass wir trotzdem jeden Sonntag eine Aufzeichnung hochladen im Spiritual Sunday. Das heißt, du kannst trotzdem ganz normal deine Spiritual Sunday Praxis weitermachen. Den Link dazu findest du auch in den Shownotes, um dich anzumelden. Das ist natürlich kostenlos. Und ansonsten freue ich mich, wenn du im Higher Self Home vorbeischaust. Das Higher Self Home ist der monatliche Mitgliederbereich quasi zum Podcast und zum Lauraland, so kann man das sagen, wo es jeden Monat einen neuen Fokus gibt, ein neues Thema, mit dem wir uns beschäftigen für dein spirituelles und persönliches Wachstum. Und ja, ich freue mich, wenn du da vorbeischaust. Den Link dazu findest du auch in den Shownotes. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt einen wunderschönen, inspirierten Tag, dass es dir gut geht. Ich schicke dir ganz viel Liebe, ganz viel Licht, eine riesige Umarmung. Und bitte denk immer daran, du bist ein Geschenk für diese Welt. Und wo auch immer du gerade in deinem Leben stehst, was dich auch immer gerade beschäftigt, glaub daran, es wird sich eine Lösung finden. Und hab einfach Vertrauen. Hab Vertrauen in deinen Weg, hab Vertrauen in dich. Und auch wenn uns das Leben manchmal vielleicht herausfordert, können wir uns eigentlich immer darauf verlassen, dass wenn wir rückblickend zurückschauen, es irgendwie doch Sinn macht. Und ich finde, das hilft immer sehr, sich darauf auch zu verlassen und trotzdem auch im Hier und Jetzt voller Liebe sein zu können. Und das wollte ich gerne noch mit dir teilen. In diesem Sinne, rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.